AmericanAlloFarmer.com is a business and a website owned and operated by my friend Liz Tagami and her husband Donald. They live up in Corning, California, and I recently had Liz on the podcast where we got to taste some of her delicious olive oils, both the Arbequina and Ascolano varieties, and they're grown and made right here in California. Well, the oils were really just the tip of the iceberg, because if you check out her website, you'll see that they import gorgeous balsamic vinegar from Modena. In fact, one of them uses three of my favorite Italian wine grapes as the base of the vinegar: Trebbiano, Lambrusco, and Sangiovese. I can't say that without singing. And while on their website, if you sign up to stay in touch, you'll receive their newsletter and you'll get the fantastic recipes that Liz and Donald have created using their beautiful products. I'm so excited to introduce all of you to American Olive Farmer, and Liz has kindly created a discount code for our listeners. Use the code SIPWITHNIKKI, capital S, capital W, and capital N, SIPWITHNIKKI, for $10 off your order, and that can be anything from the site, whether it's delicious olive oils, vinegars, or even gifts. I mean, you can send someone an olive tree as a gift. How cool is that? Check out AmericanOliveFarmer.com and support this fantastic, small, California-based, woman-led business. You can even set up an olive oil subscription. Go, check it out. You're welcome. I've pretty much stayed in the wine industry since I had my first job for 7 years, and I consulted with a whole bunch of different wineries, ended up being a professor in the wine industry. But what I didn't expect was to have this connection to my roots, because it's agriculture. Okay. And I remember being at my first vintners event, a growers event, and looking around, it's like, this is a bunch of people in overalls.
This is farming.
It's farming.
It's just a sexy end product, but it's farming.
I'm in the business of farming, and I could relate to the growers because they remind me of my grandpa, who was a farmer.
Aww.
Hello and welcome. If it is your first time joining me for Sip with Nikki, I'm so glad you're here. And if you are a regular listener, I see you and I thank you. And before we jump into this week's awesome episode, I have a quick ask. Have you shared this podcast with someone? We're getting such great feedback from all of you that are listening and waiting for new episodes every week. And we're trying to grow our listenership and add more sippers to the club. So could you do me a quick favor and tell someone you know about this podcast today? In fact, whatever platform you're listening in right now, there's usually a share button where you can text it or email the link and make someone's day and let them know about this little gem that you might be enjoying, and leave us a review. It really helps us to be more visible and make more of an impact and spread more joy, which is frankly why I'm here. Speaking of joy, have you ever been in a restaurant where you are maybe eavesdropping a little bit, or just noticing that like two people at a table next to you are just so engaged in a conversation and having so much fun with it that you're like, I wish I could hear what was going on. Like, I wish I knew what they were talking about. So today you get to do that. So today I'm going to let you pull up a chair with my friend Sally and I as we have happy hour at Willie's Wine Bar, which is in Santa Rosa, California, here in Sonoma County. From time to time, I like to interview my guest in a restaurant for a few reasons, mostly because we're blessed with such awesome restaurants where I live. But I also think that it's fun and interesting for you to hear, as people in the wine industry, what are we drinking when we go out? What are we pairing with it? And this one is extra cool because this wine bar is known for having so many by the glass options. They even give you like a half glass, which you'll hear us taking advantage of, and a lot of interesting and delicious small plates that we're pairing. So you're going to be joining us at the table. And Sally Sroke is a new friend. And I think that's also what's kind of interesting for you to listen in, is you're literally hearing this new friendship develop, because she and I only met a couple of months ago taking an improv theater class together, which we'll talk about. And we just hit it off. And then I found out that she was not only GM of a well-known winery here in Sonoma County, but also an author of two books. So after reading both of those books, I was like, I got to share, I got to shout this out to the world. So we're going to be talking about not only her entrance and experience in the wine industry as an adjunct professor of wine marketing, as a consultant and coach, but also celebrating her two wonderful books. So I read Bonus Round, A Gay Ex-Husband, A Divorce, and A Life Reimagined first. The title says it all. And then I just finished The New Jew, An Unexpected Conversion. And so these are two memoirs that Sally has written about things that she's gone through in her life, from getting a divorce because her husband was gay to making the choice to convert to Judaism. So I'm excited for you to check out her website, sallysroke.com. I'll put the link in the show notes. You can find her books on Amazon. And mostly I'm just fascinated with her spirit and her desire to make an impact with her writing. And we talk about some commonalities that we've both had that have forced us to embrace change and just navigate the craziness of life. We'll talk about the realization after getting a divorce of her having to learn how to put herself first and also help transition her children into young adulthood and adulthood. And then also just her passion for helping other people find themselves in the pages of her stories. So very excited for you to listen in. Here we go with Sally Sroke.
We both have this beautiful Sauvignon Blanc in front of us. What do we snack on?
What do you think about the ahi tuna?
I think I love it, and I often get it.
Great.
I also love scallop dumplings.
I was just looking at that.
And perfect. Or the crab tacos. I'm not saying we need all of them.
Let's do the scallop dumplings, because I haven't had them before.
Okay, and that'll be nice with us.
Perfect.
Done and done.
Hard not to look ahead at the next wine, but that's okay.
So just so you know, I have finished both books. I have my Kindle with me. And I don't want to give too much away before we get there.
Okay.
But
God, this Blanc is really nice.
It's
I'm like
really
gulping
nice.
It like water.
Have you
so
been
good.
To Aperture?
I haven't been to Aperture. They've been to us.
They're your neighbor in Healdsburg.
I know.
Beautiful photography all
yeah.
over the winery
yeah. Oh, yeah.
at Aperture.
I mean, their website's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Their wines are gorgeous. Jesse makes great wines.
He's young. Jesse Cat. Let's start with, why were you in improv class in Sebastopol?
Right?
Why were you there? I know why I was there. Why were you there?
So, a couple of reasons. First, Anina, who was in her class, she said we should take improv. She said, I'm so confronted by the idea that I know I should do it. I said, I'm in. So we looked for a class. There was one in the city. And then we're like, we don't want to schlep all the way to the city.
Yeah.
And then she texted me out of nowhere and said, hey, guess what? Remember we talked about taking an improv class a couple of years ago? Still interested? I'm like, okay. And I wasn't sure I was interested, but my answer is yes to most things, so I just
which
said
is
yes.
the foundation of
which
improv.
Right?
Good point. Good
say
point.
Say yes and
good
figure
point.
It out.
Yeah.
Right?
Predating that, though, right after my divorce, I was a co-host and panelist on a radio show called "What Would Your Mother Say?"
Okay.
Out of Stanford University. So we read this book called Improv, and it was about a metaphor for life, right? But it was also what being on a radio show is. It was a call-in show. College students would ask for advice, and we went as a
almost
panel
like
of women.
Dear Abby for
yes.
college,
yes.
Stanford
yeah. and
students.
Yeah, and then would be this generational Smarties. Thing, like a college student would answer one way. So it was that kind of thing.
Okay.
So that's where I got interested in improv.
Okay. You've never done classes or anything
But then
before?
Even rewind to that, in college I took a couple of acting
okay.
classes. It's always been in me.
Yeah.
I just never followed through. When I first moved to New York, I'm like, I'm going to get an agent and start doing auditions. So I got an agent, which like it was like an agent like anyone could get.
Yeah.
And I just did some open auditions and didn't get anything because, you know, it's what you do when you're in New York.
What were you auditioning for? What types of things?
Well, one was Tony and Tina's Wedding, which is all improv.
Yes, I remember.
It's like
yeah.
immersion
yeah.
of a wedding.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I
yeah.
auditioned for that. I was working full time in retail. I think I've always been interested. And so I thought I'd give it a try.
One of the highlights from the books, I think it was from The New Jew, which we'll talk about. And I have it highlighted, but I'm going to try to go from memory. Something about, and as kids during the holidays, we were always upstairs writing and putting on
yes.
skits. And I was like,
exactly.
oh my God, that was me.
Did
like,
you do that too?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Totally.
I was always, I mean, we called it that. I was like, you guys, let's do skits. And they're all like, yeah, no.
Oh my God.
I loved writing them. Yes. And then directing them. And
yes.
Starring in
oh,
them.
My cast walked out on me a couple of times. I had a lot to learn about management. My cast walked out.
My cast were my two sisters who were rolling their eyes.
My sister, my brother, and my neighbor. It's like, we're out of here. You're too bossy.
So many skits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I laughed when I read that you wrote. But I was so, like, yeah.
That's isn't that interesting? Like, everything you need to know about yourself you learn in kindergarten? Like, mm-hmm. It's so true. Yeah, even as a kid, I would make my sister walk with me to the library and check out scripts and, you know, plays and make them act them out.
So you've always had that passion for
theater.
I guess
I kind of forgot about it. I always think of it as a one-off, but yes.
When you moved from the Midwest to Manhattan after college, you've said you had never visited there before.
Exactly. Right.
So that,
to me, logical way to
so
make them
telling own. About your personality. So... commitment, right?
Yeah. Fantasy.
There's another question there about that, but let's unpack that.
Okay.
Like, why and how and what led you to just pick up and go somewhere you'd never been before?
Well, growing up, I always knew I'm not going to stay in Wisconsin. I just felt like I was antsy. There wasn't enough going on there for me. And it's really goofy. I used to watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
I used to go to it from New Jersey as a kid on Thanksgiving morning to freeze our patooties out.
Remind me to flash forward on this. So I used to watch that and think, I'm going to run that parade one day. Like, I really decided I was going to run that parade one day.
Not I'm going to be in it.
Oh, no.
I'm going to run it.
I'm going
Amen,
to run that
sister.
Parade.
Amen.
So
we've got to toast our Sylvia Black to that.
So I always had confidence. New York in my radar, even though I'd never been. But I just was fascinated by all that was going on there, and the pace of it and the glamour of it. And then I went to school for fashion merchandising in northern Wisconsin and farm country. I can't even put the two together, but that's where they offered it. So, yes, yeah, so I knew I wanted to live in New York, and I had an offer in Chicago, which is close to Milwaukee, which is where
I
was raised.
Right, much closer.
Much, but I thought, if I don't go now, I may never go. So God bless my father, who was super conservative as far as taking risks. He's the one who said, go. And my mom, who was more of the risk taker, said, you should take Chicago. So I had $300 in my pocket, which is ridiculous. And I stayed with a friend of a friend in Manhattan. I couldn't interview in advance. This is before internet, right? So this is 87.
Okay.
I moved out New Year's Eve just to make it dramatic. Just for effect.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. And so I landed the job I wanted to in retail. And interviewed with Macy's.
Okay.
And then turned down Macy's and took this other one, Abraham and Strauss, which doesn't exist anymore.
A&S.
A&S.
Yeah, I am of a certain age from the Northeast. I know A&S.
Exactly. So they had the best retail training program, and that's the one I wanted, and was fortunate to get it.
Wow.
So that's what brought me to New York, and then I was there for 14 years.
And that's where you met your now ex-husband.
Yes. And he's exactly what I was looking for. I met him a year later, and I thought, I want to move here and find a New Yorker husband. I just knew. When I moved there, I went to Macy's, and I'd never been in a department store that was 8 stories like that. I had 2 stories.
Those rickety wooden escalators.
Which I thought were phenomenal.
That only Macy's has still to this day.
Don't you love that?
Love that.
And I will never forget going, I can get chills now. It's been so many decades, right? But I'll never forget going into Macy's on 34th Street.
Yes.
Like, this is where the parade is. Mm-hmm. And going up the escalator, feeling like I was living a dream, and I turned around and looked down at all the hubbub in the cosmetics and jewelry area, thinking, this is where I belong. And I went up to the floor where they had gowns, and I had them unlocked, all the gowns were locked up, right?
New York City.
Because it's New York City, right? And they're expensive, right? And so I had them unlocked, like this 23-year-old, unlocking all these gowns for me to try, because I decided that's the life I'm going to want, or I do want. So we better get used to it now and start trying.
You were manifesting.
I was manifesting.
Not wedding gowns, just
gowns.
No, okay,
wedding gowns. Okay. Gowns, like gala gowns, yeah. And then so I said, earmark the flash forward. When I was newly married, living on the Upper West Side, the parade staging area was one block north of our home. So we used to go out the night before where all these parties
the
and watching them
up the balloons,
inflating
the
all the balloons and the floats. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm not running the parade, but it's like all right here. It was just so exciting.
It's so interesting to sit here with you to do this interview, because I've read both of your books, so like I know a lot. I know what you've shared.
You know me way too well
now. I
feel
like I do. So
like I gotta stop with the memoirs. God, people
I'm
know
like,
me
well,
too
I don't
well.
Have to ask this question because I already know, but my listeners don't know. So right. I will ask the questions. So let me connect the dots. We did our improv class, you and I. And on the
in which you are incredibly talented, by the way, plugging you. You are so talented and so fun.
Well, it helps with interviewing and podcast and
but
hosting
it's in
wine
your blood.
Tasting.
It's in your blood.
It is. There was a hot moment where I also thought about like SNL. And,
oh, totally.
Because I was performing improv in Orlando, just at a very amateur level.
Oh,
but
very cool.
Loved it. And I missed it, which is why I went to the class that you and I met in a few months ago. And at the end of class, we all went next door to that little restaurant and we sat down. And, you know, here's what is so interesting about the class. We had a very cool group of people and we all got to talk for like 6 minutes before class.
5 minute break.
5 minute break.
That's it.
Pee and meet your friends. And then
pee
like
and meet.
Walking down the street like to the car at the end. So we all knew like tiny bits of each other.
Morsels, right.
And then we were sitting at that final class dinner and you said, oh, I wrote a book. It's called Bonus Round. And it's about my divorce from my gay husband and a cattle drive. And I was like, what?
Like every other book.
Like what? Like what did she just say?
And I what did she just say?
Could not wait to get home from that dinner and download all my Kindle, aww, which I did. And then I read it and then I didn't see you for weeks and I couldn't wait to see you because then
break.
I was going to be like, oh my God, I read your book. It was so amazing. But anyway, the cattle drive is how Bonus Round starts out.
Right.
And it is so powerful.
Mm.
And so my question is, when you write, especially because I read that book first, so I'm getting to know you as a writer and your tone and your detail, and I'm like, how long ago is this thing that she's writing about? Because the detail, the conversation, because it's a memoir, it's true.
Yes, yes.
It's not a novel, it's your life. How do you recall and write with so much detail that I feel like I'm there when it was, and how many years after it were you writing about it?
Right. That cattle drive had to be 20 years ago. Is that amazing?
See?
Yeah. You're like, stop. Yes. I'll answer this in two ways. One, I think when you're really present in the moment, it's easy to recall.
Oh, do you mean one of the principles that we practice in improvisation?
Oh, there you go.
Being
that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think we all have that ability for recall, even if we don't realize we're present in the moment. It's just a matter of finding the quiet and the space for it. So for me, I think it's an indulgence to pause and really remember what that felt like in the moment. And then I have the journals I can go back on to fill in some of the blanks. Like in Bonus Round, there's some excerpts about my kids that I found in journals I wrote for them. I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot this. And I wouldn't have had I not reread the journals. So there's some of those details.
So journaling helps fill in some of the blanks.
Fill in the blanks, yeah.
That makes sense.
But the feeling sense, I think, is more a mark of courage because it's the hard thing about writing a memoir is you're feeling it all over again, I think, in my experience of being a memoirist. I'm not telling the story from an observer's point of view. Yeah,
I'm telling it from my
heart. It's from the inside. Like my mom has said, wow, you really felt all that. You remember those feelings. I said, yeah, well, that's the hard part. You got to feel it again to write it. I mean, there were times I was writing, I was just sobbing.
Well, I was crying when I was reading it.
Yeah, so that's how.
How do you, in a little nutshell, starting with Bonus Round, how do you describe what that's about?
Bonus Round is a story about a woman's surprise that her husband is gay, and then following her own inner compass, which is my consulting firm, right? Her own inner compass, and being true to herself and how she manages that divorce. And it is about choice. So I could have chose bitterness, but I chose love. It's about a woman becoming empowered and having gratitude for her marriage in the face of divorce. And I'm sure you read that thread throughout the book, which is like, this is really hard, I'm heartbroken, and I still love my husband, and it doesn't mean it was all null and void. And that's how many people treat divorce, or people who are divorced. Like, oh, well, you know, your marriage didn't quite count, or it was a big mistake. It wasn't a mistake. It just was the surprise ending to it. And it's also a story about a mother's commitment to family. Like, I just refuse to accept that my kids lose a family over this.
They were young at the time, 8 and 10 or...
Even younger. Harrison was going into fourth grade and Ollie was going into first grade. So that was the hardest part. It's like, this sucks for them, you know? So the mother bear in me came out like, there's no way they lose a family over this. And I did everything I could to prepare them to find out that their dad's gay, what that looks like, living in a provincial suburb, essentially. It's really a story about hope. We as women, anyone going through divorce, there's an opportunity for their own reinvention. So the subtle punchline is, my husband came out, but then so did I. Not in my sexuality, but I am fully realized now as an individual, where so I was a stay-at-home mom before I found out my husband was gay. And then I had to go back to work and had to boot everything up and have a total change in lifestyle.
That roller coaster of you in the book, like going back to work, finding the job, finding the house, setting up the house, not knowing where the paycheck, figuring it out. Like, that's
recession
what I
hitting.
Admired so much about you. Like, I live by everything is figure outable.
I love that. Figure it out, right? Yes.
And you just kept figuring it out one step at a time.
And it took, thank you, and I did, and one of my motivations for writing it is because I've had so many people say, well, you're so strong, you're so resilient. It's like, I'm not. I don't think I come across great in the book because I'm not this strong superwoman. I question myself all along.
You come across real and honest.
That was the
and
goal.
Then great. And then strong, but
total fiction.
Real and honest first, well, which I think is what makes it so relatable, emotional, powerful. Yeah.
Thank you for that word, because that's the word that was really important to me. Like, I didn't want women to look at me as the other, as, oh, well, you're the exception. You're built differently. Like, you're really strong. You can find your way through. It's like, no. Like, when my son Harrison read it, he said, I had no idea how much you question yourself along the way.
Which is probably the best compliment from a child who was in it.
Right.
To not know.
He thought I just always had to figure it out.
Like, Mom's got her shit together.
Exactly. So he said, your pattern is you question yourself. And then there's this turning point, like, I got this for you, I'm just going to do it. And that is, I wanted women to know what they see in me is the same as them. You just persevere. So I'm not strong. Determined, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Resilient, resourceful, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think most people are.
But human. Still human first.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read on your website part of the motivation of why you have written these books. You wrote, the lives of others can be our compass. Talk to me about that, Gemma.
That's why I love reading memoirs.
Well, I put this tuna in my mouth.
The tuna is so good. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by other people. For me, doing interviews is hard to talk about myself. And like writing a memoir is hilarious to me because I don't like talking about myself. I work in wine marketing.
Yes.
Right.
Which we'll talk about.
In sales. I love promoting someone else's brand. But I don't consider myself a brand. Like, I want if people find my story and find it useful, it's wonderful. I'm not as promotional with myself at all. But I
should
be.
Well, make no mistake, listeners, this is promotion, and I am promoting the heck out of her as a person and as an author and as a wine person and as a friend.
It's hard. Writing is hard. It's torture. Like, I've told people, like, sometimes I'll hit a sentence, and I feel like we are just wrestling around on the living room floor till we get, like, I just
you
get...
You in the sentence?
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
It's like, usually when?
It takes time, but yes. Or we exhaust each other. We're laying there flat out on our backs. I just see like this snake of a sentence and we're just wrestling around like, oh, I can't get it. You know, but I know it's there. I know I can find it. So, and then writing a memoir is hard because especially a memoir like this is very emotional. So what motivates me to write is to be a service to others. That's it.
It comes through. I mean.
Oh, thank you.
That is not surprising. You're talking about sentences. So I'm like, ooh, let me pull up some of my highlights of some of the sentences that I thought were amazing. So this is actually from The New Jew, which we'll talk about. That was so beautifully written.
Mm.
It stopped me in my tracks and it gave me chills. So from The New Jew, page 45. The door clicked behind us and we sauntered silently down the carpeted hall. I clasped Michael's fingers, the handle of my Bloomingdale's bag filled with leftovers dangling from my other hand. I hoped Bernice had packaged the love and unbridled energy of the evening with a foil-wrapped brisket so that when I opened it, I would experience the evening all over again.
Mm.
Like, I was there. I could feel the carpet. I could smell the hallway. I could smell the brisket.
That quote makes me miss my mother-in-law. She was just so loving.
Food is love, and I think that's probably why that
wine is love
resonated with me too. Just from an Italian family and times of crisis and joy, it's like yes. So the new Jew opens with her passing.
Yeah,
and then we go on the journey with you while you examine
it's a reflection. Your faith. Yes,
and eventual conversion to Judaism.
Yeah, so the subtitle is an unexpected conversion. I never expected to convert, so I married my husband who was Jewish, never asked me to convert, didn't expect me to. He loved a Christmas tree, so he was good.
Because I read these books out of order,
right?
I read Bonus Round first, so now I know he's gay. Then I'm going back and reading The New Jew, and you talk about he loved a Christmas tree and having a theme and the decoration.
I'm like,
I'm like, Sally, Sally,
I know.
Red, black.
Right.
Have people said that before?
Yes. Yeah. I love that. It's like, could, said, what's the word?
Foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
Yes. I was like, oh my God.
The foreshadowing. Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, so did I do myself a disservice by reading them? It, not in the order that you wrote them?
Not
do
at
you
all.
Think it matters?
I don't think it matters.
Okay.
I really don't.
Okay.
In fact, I wrote The New Jew while I was going through divorce, so that was painful. So I had to put that out of my head while I was writing The New Jew.
Okay.
And interestingly, it was my former husband, who was my husband at the time, who suggested I write The New Jew. He said, I know you've always wanted to write a book, but how about writing about your conversion? I'm like, who cares? I converted. It's not very interesting. He goes, yeah, people are really fascinated. I'm like,
it is
really?
Interesting.
It's interesting that people
convert? It is fascinating. And I was like, if I were to get another 2-ounce glass of something that will pair with the scallop dumplings and the tuna that's in front of us.
I'm maybe Chardonnay.
Chardonnay
is really nice.
Ooh.
I never have a Chablis.
I'm going to go with your recommendation.
I'll do the same. Just do what Nikki does.
Two ounces.
Two.
Thank you.
In Catholicism, I always say in the book too, like in how I was raised, I can't make blanket statements about the faith.
Right.
But like we went every Sunday, and that really was a thing, like to be a quote unquote good Catholic, you go every Sunday. And we were really involved. My parents were really involved with the church.
Yeah.
It was the center of our social life, really. So in Judaism, absolutely it's encouraged to come to temple, but Judaism is really what happens in the home. And that's why they accept, like, it's hard for families of young kids to come to services on a Friday night, because the most important thing is you have Shabbat at home and have your family time.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
I grew up with a lot of Jewish friends.
You did.
I went to many, many bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs just in my neighborhood in central New Jersey. There were just as many Jewish families as Italian families. So yes, I grew up with probably just as many temples in my town as churches.
So different here. I think it's one of the hardest things about, I mean, living in California is not hard except financially, right?
Amen.
But
that's why I have 3 jobs.
Right? No, it's true. It's why I work at the winery. So I'm the GM of Arista Winery, so the listeners know.
We'll just throw that in there.
We'll just throw that
Did
in there.
All hear
the best
that?
Pinot and Chardonnay in all the land.
Oh, see, you do know how to promote. There's the elevator pitch.
See there, for everyone else, I can do it.
It is beautiful Pinot Noir and
gorgeous
Chardonnay in Sonoma County, in Healdsburg.
Exquisite estate, approachable people and experience, like incredible
wines. Well,
yeah,
because you make sure it's that way in your role,
Thank you. It was that way before I came in, though, to a really wonderful family.
Nice.
So, and I've got, you know, I do executive coaching as well and teach at the local college.
But you and I, one of the many things we have in common, we are multi-passionate individuals, entrepreneurs, whatever you want to call it, and it's okay. We don't have to be one thing.
No. We are, I was thinking of this, like the Pinot grape, very complex.
Thank you so much. So a little Chardonnay from the Chablis region.
Nice. This is going to pair perfectly.
Yes, it is, with scallops and ahi. It's just as bright and fresh as the Sauvignon Blanc that I just had.
It really is.
It's not California Chardonnay-y because it's not California.
No better.
It's from France.
So I appreciate people's curiosity, but I've been in California for over 20 years, but I miss having people know what the high holidays are. You know, when I first moved here and had to call my kids out sick for school for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Because the schools are not closed for that.
No.
Yeah, they were when I was growing up.
Right. And most of the world, they wouldn't be, right? I was very spoiled. I converted in New York City. It's nothing different about that.
Do you think that helped with it? Meaning, if you were living somewhere else at that stage in your life, would it have been less available to you to convert?
I think if I had met my husband in the Midwest, he would have been in a Jewish community there too, in a Jewish family, so probably would have been the same.
Okay. It was really more about not geographically where you were, but him and his family.
And friends.
It was about Bernice.
And Bernice, my late mother-in-law, to Bernice.
Oh, and her
she's
brisket.
Smiling somewhere.
She sounded like a badass.
She was a badass woman, for sure. So that's one thing I miss about being in California, is having that just being more.
Found a community here, a Jewish community?
Mm-hmm. I've joined different congregations, and it's been fine, but I can't say.
Not the same.
Okay.
You think you'll stay here?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to apply for citizenship in Croatia. It's my
descendancy. I'm going to apply for citizenship in Italy, which I just have as my mouth hole.
You and I are so similar. It scares me. Are you serious?
I am serious. I decided that after my trip a month ago.
So can you do it through descendancy?
Yes.
Me too, with Croatia. See you there.
Oh, my God.
See you
on the water with our EU passports.
So I don't know. I mean, I really enjoy California. I really do love the wine country. It's special. It's incredible.
This is where my brain just went.
What is it like to be Jewish in Croatia? What's the leading religion there? Not Judaism, right?
No, but it's interesting. My dad said he always wondered if his mother was of Jewish descent because she was adopted. So I did the 23andMe. And it shows I'm 1% Ashkenazi.
Okay.
And so I texted my whole family and said, Shabbat Shalom and Mazel Tov, we're all Jewish.
1%?
Yeah, it's funny. But today I had an emotional day because it's a stupid reason to have an emotional day, but there's a lot behind it. So, you know, I just moved back. And
how old now?
25.
Okay.
And living in Berkeley. But I was looking in my dining room through their eyes. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, it's just schlock, because it's like the dining room table I've had all the time, like since the kids were young. And so I decided it's time to just go mid-century, like I like my style. So I found
my dining room.
Well, okay. Kind of my whole look, but not, it's still somewhat eclectic, right? But like,
okay.
Just lighter and more contemporary.
Okay.
So I contacted someone at work. And I said, do you want this table? And he said, that would be great. I would love it. And then I just wrote, I'm so glad it's going to someone. Like, I'm not selling this
table
that
you talk about in the book.
Yes!
That you moved from one house to the other and started over.
God, good memory.
Doing arts and crafts with the kids at that table.
What a great, yes. I actually wrote about that table.
Yeah. Did you just get rid of this table?
I'm just about to,
And okay.
So I wrote to him on this text. I said, I'm so glad it's going to a good home. I raised my kids around this table. You know, he wrote back, oh my God, Sally. And then I just started sobbing. Oh. Like he understood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like me going blonde. It's like it's new stage. It's time.
I'm blonde in the 3 months that I've known
you. I know.
You.
It's been a transformational
the
3 months.
The first time we met.
Like you came in like, what happened here?
You came to class. We're all like, oh, look at you.
Yeah. And so it was very like Olivia Ollie was a infant when we got that table. I remember when Michael bid on that table on eBay. And
Michael, the interior designer?
Right, exactly. Another hint, hint.
Red flag!
Right, exactly. And then...
not red flag. That's not the right term.
No, but not red flag, but just like... Yeah.
Flag. We'll just say rainbow flag.
Rainbow flag! And so, yeah, moved from New York and then the different iterations of California through my different phases of life. So now to release it, it's like done. Like done. And
like
I was just
sad, melancholy release, or like freeing release?
No, sad. Like we're done
so
with
don't
that
get
phase.
Rid of it.
The new table arrived today. It's like, I'm good.
Pickle, it's to you.
Right? It's like, okay, I'm good. It's time. It's my dining room
now. Okay.
But it's just the letting go of the last phase and of waiting, like, what does the next stage look like? And it's not based on what do my children need? It's not based on what does my spouse need? It's not based on what career can I get? Do I need to develop? It's just based on me.
What does Sally want?
Those words are, you just spoke Russian to me. I don't know what that means. For myself, because I think now, not that I haven't been offered that opportunity, I haven't wanted the opportunity to think about what to sell you. It's easier to distract by what other people need. But that's all been taken away. That's all in my rearview mirror. What do I want?
It's kind of exciting.
It is on paper.
I'm kind of excited for you.
and there are days I'm super excited.
Yeah.
Hence looking for Croatian citizenship, and I can do whatever
taking
I want.
Taking improv class.
Taking guitar class for a year now. I took the Japanese drumming, which was amazing.
Awesome.
It does feel wide open. But at other times, it's like, years ago, I wrote this piece. I didn't ever publish it. But I didn't know the last time my child reached for my hand would be the last time they reached for my hand. You know, and that's how I feel about them entering adulthood, my former husband moving far away. And now it's just like, and here I am. And now what? And it's been a grieving process. It's been an exciting process, too. But I never thought about this stage. It didn't occur to me that I'll get to the stage and then what?
So the entrance into the wine world kind of came when you had moved out. It was you and the kids. You were on your own. You had to now support the family. You were hell-bent, as people read in this book, about this wine job that you were interviewing and interviewing and interviewing for. Why the wine world? Especially I feel like that crazy time you were in.
Right? I think the wine world came to me. I feel like it was absolutely meant to be. I needed a higher level job than when I was working right after my divorce to support the kids. Not that Michael wasn't doing his share, but the recession hit, so I had to depend on myself. So that's the opportunity that came along.
You had to aim high.
I had
right away.
Financially, like I
needed executive level. I think you're right.
I needed executive level, and that came from like writing out my budget and what I needed. That opportunity came up through my hairdresser. Of course, makes no sense. And I just threw my hat in the ring for this executive
job. You do write about that. The hairdresser was the connector.
Yeah, she's like, I've got a client who's looking for this person.
Yes.
For a vice president level job, which I never worked executive level. I never worked in the wine industry. I never worked in hospitality.
Did you like wine at that point?
I knew nothing.
Love wine?
I knew nothing about
wine. That wasn't
wine.
My question. It wasn't about your knowledge.
Thank you.
Just
you're
about
right.
Your like or love.
I liked wine.
Liked.
I liked. I'm from Milwaukee. I drank beer more than wine.
Don't they? Wisconsin drinks brandy? Isn't it like the biggest brandy-consuming state? Brandy.
Yep.
Okay.
Big brandy.
So liked wine, but wasn't like me, where you're like, oh my God, I got to figure out how to work in this business.
I never felt I had to get in the wine industry. It's like, okay. I knew I had to get an executive job, and I knew how to run a business. Like, I'd done that for the construction company.
Your home.
Yes.
And which is essentially a business that you were sole proprietor of all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. And, like, when I launched The New Jew, I definitely promoted and marketed a lot. I was on book tour and did a lot of public speaking and signing.
Which you love.
Which I love. When I was on book tour for New Jew, I never even prepared notes. I'm like, I'll go in and know what the audience needs. Like, that's...
Love that.
I just feel like I was there to be of service, you know? And that was it.
To provide the compass for others.
To provide the compass for others and find themselves in the pages of the story. That's the goal. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's just cool.
So the wine industry found me. And then I've pretty much stayed in the wine industry since. I've had my first job for 7 years, and I consulted with a whole bunch of different wineries, ended up being a professor in the wine industry. But what I didn't expect was to have this connection to my roots, because it's agriculture.
Okay.
And I remember being at my first vintners event, a growers event, and looking around, it's like, this is a bunch of people in overalls.
This is farming.
It's farming.
It's just a sexy end product, but it's farming.
I'm in the business of farming, and I could relate to the growers because they remind me of my grandpa, who was a farmer.
Aww.
It's like we're at the mercy of Mother Nature.
Amen.
And then there's this creative element, like, what do you do with grapes? And then there's this philosophy about integrity, like, do you want to make the same wine every vintage? That's okay. You can add juice and do whatever you want. Or do we want to have a different philosophy like we do at Arista and make it all about what Mother Earth gives us and try to... not just accentuate that, just highlight that, let it be that. It takes a lot of confidence to do that. So there are wineries that have customers, their customer wants the exact same wine, the predictability of that bottle, regardless of the vintage. And there's another customer who loves the excitement of how is 2017 different from 2018. And so they want to taste what happened that year with the earth, with the terroir. And so there's no right or wrong.
Yeah.
It's just what the customer wants.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. This is what I love about it. And me as a winemaker on my own project, yes, we're trying to express that year, because I always talk about wine as like a time capsule in the bottle.
I love
Speaking
that.
Speaking of that year I and what happened that. To get it in that bottle. This might be a difference between like a boomer customer base versus a more millennial or Gen Z. I don't know. I'm going to take your wine marketing class. I'm starting next month, so maybe we'll touch on it. But I wonder if the younger wine drinker is looking for more of that excitement and okay with it being less consistent from year to year. I don't know.
We need some raw wine.
We do.
I'm loving these little 2 ounce pours.
Too.
This is fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
I feel like, at least for me, and please don't feel like you have to do what I do, but I want to move into
only
some
because
light,
I have so far.
I know. Some light red next.
I had to go to Pinot next. I held out as long as I could.
All right. Pick a Pinot. Pick a 2 ounce Pinot.
Okay. You know what? Let's do Willamette Valley.
Patricia Green Reserve.
Patricia Green
Willamette
Reserve.
Valley. Let's 2022. 2 ounces each, please.
And how are you with food?
Okay at the moment.
I'm okay at the
moment,
too.
We might add something eventually. That's what I love about Willie's Wine Bar is whenever I go to a restaurant, I want to get all the appetizers. Mm. I just want all the apps.
Ah.
Like, and I want to go with as many people as possible because I want to taste all the things. I want two bites of everything. Is that not reflective of my life and needing to have a hand in everything, right? I know, maybe it's FOMO, I don't know. But that's why I love it here, because it's all small plates.
I think it's FOMO, but I think it's actually just a deep appreciation for the variety of life. It's just an appreciation.
It is an appreciation.
Yeah.
I want to taste everything.
You don't want to miss it, but because you appreciate it so much.
Yeah. So I love that even just with two of us here tonight, we're going to try multiple wines, especially with their 2 ounce half glass program is awesome because we can taste all the things. And I like to pair, right? Oh,
the white was beautiful, but now
I'm thinking sliders maybe.
Yes,
or like the pork belly.
Let's do that.
Pot stickers are great with Pinot. Okay, what were we talking about?
You're talking about the consumer of different.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
See, there is a correlation with generational?
I think maybe it's a correlation of confidence in wine drinking. Like I've had.
Oh, nice word.
I've had friends who they always wanted the same wine of that same purveyor because it was predictable.
It's safe.
Exactly.
And they're intimidated and confused by wine.
Yes.
And they don't want to risk their glass or their bottle money in case they don't like it.
Well, and I blame.
So people drink very narrowly, I think.
Well, I blame the industry for making people afraid and intimidated.
Yeah, like, that's why I started the podcast, to try to help people get out of that.
No one should be hosted
bubble.
In a way like, oh, well, that's not how it is. Like, no, whatever you say is right.
Yeah.
It's your experience.
Cheers with our Willamette Valley Pinot Noir. This is beautiful color.
Tom meant to say that earthier Pacific Northwest Pinot.
Not Russian River, Sonoma County, Pinot.
No brightness in the cherry. I'm thinking with bonus round, Nikki, I guess I think about people who have just bitter divorces or just so much contention that it hurts the children, and that divorce is an opportunity for us to grow up and to still be the adults. It's like so many people take a hall pass and it's like, well, I'm divorced, so I can make comments about my ex. And it's really a big part of the reason I wrote too, is like, you can do this differently. With grace, grace for yourself, grace for your former, and just surrender and acceptance. Like, I'm getting divorced, this is how it goes. My hope is that if people read Bonus Round, when someone says I'm divorced, they take pause and realize there's a lot of pain behind that statement and to handle them with care.
You've got to feel like, with both of your books, even just how they affected me, you've got to know and feel how much you are helping, influencing, enlightening, lifting people up. I mean, I'm sure that's a big part of why you do it, right?
It's funny, that's how I feel about other people. Like, people amaze me. I find people just amazing.
Yeah.
So I write in Bonus Round how I find myself being like a sociologist watching other people and how they are in marriage. Like, oh wait, that's not us. There's something missing. But it answers like, I knew there was something missing in my childhood too, is something that I yearned for. Hence, I gotta go. I gotta go to New York. I need a clean
break. I gotta move somewhere that I've seen on TV and the Macy's.
Exactly. I gotta run that parade. I think I have a real passion for sharing the courage of being who you are and whatever that is.
Yeah. I just remembered when we were in our class where we met and I overheard you say about Bonus Round, about a divorce and an ex-husband and a cattle drive. And then I heard you talking to some of our classmates a couple weeks later about your other book, The New Jew, and it was about conversion to Judaism. And you were speaking to someone, our classmate, who is Jewish.
Roberta?
Yes.
Yes.
And I remember hearing that in the moment, you know, on one of our little breaks in our class. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But I was kind of like, well, I don't need to read that. This doesn't really apply to me. I'm not Jewish. I'm aware of Judaism because I grew up around it. I'm not looking for anything. And I kind of dismissed it, right?
Sure.
But then I read Bonus Round, and I loved your style and how you write and getting to know you, that I was like, well, I can't not read it.
Mm.
And I have to say that having literally just finished it this week, The New Jew, was just as, if not more, moving, even though on paper you wouldn't think, oh, well, I can relate to that. I absolutely could relate to so many things that you were saying. So I'm saying this because I think everyone should read both of them, because there are things to take away from both, even if you can't draw a literal line to your situation and what you are writing about. There's so much poignancy, thoughtfulness, and care in how you write that I think, regardless of people's situation, there's something to be taken away from both of
them.
Thank
you.
Yeah. And
thank
I didn't
you.
Put that together until just now, and then I
right.
remembered, I heard you say to her, oh, it's about my conversion to Judaism, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm
and
not just kind of converting, now. I need to study on Judaism,
one.
Right.
I'm the one about the gay husband, because I think that's interesting and quirky, you know?
It was a cattle drive,
yeah.
So there's that.
Which was still the best thing of Bonus Round. So cool. So, yeah, that was just a realization I just had sitting here at the table.
Oh, thank you. Well, as you're saying that, I'm realizing is this, the new Jew, I think, is more about the reconciling of who I was raised to be versus who I am.
And so it's pulling deeper than just the conversion.
Yeah, it's not about the religion so much. It's like, who
yeah.
am I?
Yeah.
And where was I finding my place in the
yeah.
world?
Yeah.
Away from the place I was raised,
yeah.
both geographically and spiritually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think giving ourselves permission to question everything is critical. I wish there was more of that now.
Should we order
yes.
another dish from, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to me. Pork belly pot stickers?
Yes.
What is the last thing that you said about being okay to explore?
I realized that as a teenager, I remember telling my mom, I'm going to have to start making changes or I'm not going to have a very fun life. And I did. Like, I went to different college, and then I took an internship in Chicago, then I moved to London for a little bit for a semester. It's like, and every time was super uncomfortable.
I parallel your life, my life and your life parallel.
Tell me more.
In this. I don't want to get into all the details of me. This is about you. But just that theme of change and getting settled somewhere and then changing. And then whether it was my choice to change or things were being changed for me. And then getting comfortable and then getting uncomfortable and finding out. For like, that's reinventing and recreating myself for 48 years has been the only constant thing. So I'm used to
that. But you must have people in your world that mirror that. Because I did, like, when I go
I
back to the Midwest.
I have people in my world that support that.
That's different.
They
Me too.
Support it. They
or
say,
admire it.
Go.
Admire
Try it.
It.
Like your dad said about New York versus Chicago. Go. Right? Everyone around me has always been supportive of even the craziest things that I've wanted to do, like going through a divorce and moving to California by myself to work in the wine business and live in a house in the middle of a vineyard on a mountain with no cell service. And they were like, okay.
I love that.
Go. You can always come back. You can always come home. We're here.
And that support is wonderful.
None of this would have happened without that.
I love that. And I feel the same. I feel really fortunate and blessed to have a family that's so supportive. I mean, they couldn't wait for Bonus Round to come out. As we're talking about improv, I'm realizing that huge value. And we may not be talking about how we are testing ourselves or being uncomfortable, but just by the mere fact that we're there, we've got a common value.
Even just take the time to carve out 6 to 8 on a Tuesday for 8 weeks as all working professionals.
Yeah.
Not easy to get there, yet we did.
And, like, for me, it's really hard to do something I'm not good at. I'm just definitely not good at it.
Well, first of all, you were good at it as your classmate, but I get that.
And the great thing about improv is it's so supportive.
Yeah.
By nature of improv, right? Like, you can't, like, no one's, there's no judgment. It's so positive. Beautiful.
Like, all the dishes we've had tonight are beautiful looking and tasting. But in my opinion, tell guests when they're asking for somewhere to go in Sonoma County and I say, go to Willie's Wine Bar, I always say, and get the pork belly pot stickers. It's like an orange citrus sauce, got these mushrooms on the top, the greens, they're a little bit crispy.
Beautiful. They do such a great job here.
if you were going to have one more two outs
but
to
we
close
are.
It out, what would it be?
I'm thinking a red blend.
Yes, let's do it. Because there's definitely some richness to this pork.
Yep.
They have Ramazzotti on here. Ramazzotti is our grower.
Oh,
we
really?
Get our Sangiovese.
Well, I think we should have that
for
then.
For Solovato.
Let's have that. Super Tuscan.
Super Tuscan.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. 2-2 Ramazzotti.
You good ears.
Thanks.
So, when I think about my leadership style, two of my favorite words are what if. What if we try it this way? What if we add a subscription model to our membership? What if we have walk-in?
It just seems like the more things feel unsteady in the world, the more we grip onto the sameness of life.
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
So I love the what if in leadership and giving people a safe place, be like, let's just give it a try. And the only sense of failure is we didn't try. Mm-hmm. You know, what if trying is the way to go? I think the same is true for personal lives, for my personal life. Like, what if there's a different religion that fits me better? What if it's Judaism, which I thought would never fit me? What if the East Coast is a fit for me?
What if the wine business?
The wine industry, like I said, I knew nothing about wine because I enjoyed it enough. But what if I'm really capable? There's that passage in Bonus Round where I'm interviewing for this vice president role and I'm talking to my friend on the phone and I just start doubling over laughing. Standing on the sidewalk in San Francisco going to a different interview, like, this is ridiculous that I'm interviewing for a vice president role in an up-and-coming winery. And her response was, that's not ridiculous at all, Sally. Why would that be? That's not ridiculous. You're completely
it's just
able
the
to do this.
Because of the title?
Yes. And the scope of work. I've never had, you know, hundreds of people report in to me, much less three.
Hundreds.
Well, when I started, there were 13 people, and then it turned into 300 in 2 months. Which is craziness, right? But I, in my heart of hearts, I knew I could do it even though I hadn't done it before. And I love that saying, just because you haven't done it doesn't mean you don't know how to. Like, we know what we know about ourselves. But what if you are capable without having to prove you've done it? And I think that's the model for life. And I think it's what'll keep me young, is living the what if. What if I want to move to Croatia? It's like, what if? What if it's all absolutely possible? The only task we have is to believe it. Or try on the idea of believing it. Going to Macy's and trying on the gowns for a gal I've never been invited to because I've been in there 36 hours. You know, and flash forward, I absolutely have that. In fact, I worked for a fashion company that made gowns. Couture. And so it's like we know where we're going. We just have to let go and let it happen. So coming back to the cattle drive, mm-hmm. There's so many metaphors in there. And what is, like, if you were to drop the reins on the horse, they know where to go. Mm-hmm. Just let go a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hold on too tight. You're going to be bucked off. You're going to be reared up.
Isn't it such a metaphor for life?
Like, just let go a little bit. Loosen up on the rein. You'll go where you're supposed to go. And P.S., you probably pretty much know where you're going. You just may take a moment or two to believe it. Start living as if you are.
When you talk about the cattle drive being such a metaphor, my last highlight that I have in my Kindle during the cattle drive, you're right, in the saddle, I had learned what it felt like to be taken care of on the cattle drive, and it was a stark contrast to how I felt in my marriage. The message was clear, it should not be this hard to be loved. But it took you getting on a freaking horse in the middle of the desert, getting lost, sorry, spoiler alert,
yeah,
and meeting some crazy personalities in there to actually listen to what was already in there.
Right.
That's how I learned that.
Yeah,
that's great.
That was a powerful highlight. So many people read back that line, like, it should not be this hard to be loved. Yeah, it took being removed from my environment and everything that made me comfortable in that environment to be with myself in a brand new environment to see that.
That's why we do those things. We get out of town.
Yes, like when I'm in the
literally and figuratively.
When I was on the cattle drive, I wasn't a mother. I wasn't a wife. I wasn't a volunteer in the lunchroom.
You had chaps.
I know, I love those. They're very well worn because I've gone on a lot of cattle drives since.
Last question.
Yes.
As we cut into our pork belly pot stickers with our Ramazzotti Super
Tuscan,
is there another book?
Oh, there'll be many more books. I just don't know what the next one is.
Okay.
Probably not a memoir. Okay. There'll be other books. And what I've been sort of meditating on is like, what do I have to say? What do people need? That's right. That's what I've been pondering.
Is that why you teach?
Oh, yeah.
And coach. but like a classroom too. Teaching.
Yeah, I love, well, I feel like, again, like this isn't my knowledge to hold. Like when you read back some of those sentences, like, oh, that moved through me. I almost can't take credit for them. That's how it feels. Except when I get in the wrestling matches, those I win.
I'll ever read back highlights or quotes from a book like that to you, and you are like, oh, I don't even remember writing that. Like you said, it moves through you. Mm-hmm. Is that different than I don't remember writing that?
Yeah, it's funny. I almost feel like I can't take credit for it. I think it's more like I'm glad I could capture the feelings of that with the right words. Like,
okay.
Words fascinate me. Like, all that makes a book or an essay, words in a certain order, evoke a feeling in others. It's just fascinating to me. They're just words.
Well, you know the order, and you evoke a lot from me in both of these books, so I'm really excited for people to pour themselves a really nice, lovely glass of wine and jump into these books. And
they go well with a glass of wine, for sure.
Sure. I mean, what doesn't? Mm. Thank you for doing this.
It's been amazing
talking
with you tonight.
Thank you for eating and drinking with me tonight.
Thank you for having me. I love talking with you. Thank you.
And I'm, of course, going to put all of your links, your social media, your website, the books. I'll put all the links in the show notes so people know how to find all your
things. Thank you. Thank you.
So as you heard me share with Sally, I really was moved and touched and inspired by both of these books, and I am excited for you to experience them for yourself. Her website is Sally Sroak, which is S-R-O-K, sallysroak.com. You can learn more about her and also find links to purchase the books, which also can be purchased on Amazon. And again, a bonus round and The New Jew are going to bring so much joy and thoughtfulness to your life. I just can't wait for you to experience it. But you heard us say the instruction is that you must enjoy both books with a nice glass of wine. Speaking of wine, I will put in the show notes the four beautiful wines that we tasted in case you'd like to try them for yourselves, as well as a link for Willie's Wine Bar. And I just want to say thank you to our local favorite spot. And thank you to Hannah, our server, for guiding us through this beautiful meal. You can also follow Sally on Instagram. And while you're at it, make sure you're following me, Nikki Lamberti. I will put links to both Instagram accounts in the show notes here. And as always, if you'd like to support the podcast and buy me a glass of wine, I'll pass it on to Sally next time we get together. There is a link to be an angel and support the podcast in the notes as well. As always, I certainly do appreciate you listening. I can't wait to share more with you next week. But until then, sip well.